It's Tuesday, June 13th, 2006. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Becca Bartle.
Today is the 40th anniversary of the Miranda Law. And coming up on the KBOO News at 7, a Eugene woman is refusing to deploy to Iraq. Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald has dropped the investigation of Karl Rove. An Israeli airstrike has killed 10 people today, at least 8 of them civilians. Portland area weather, showers likely, with a chance of thunderstorms over the Cascade, highs in the mid-60s. And tonight, mostly cloudy, chance of showers and temperatures in the low 50s.
Eugene police say a 21-year-old Eugene woman who refused to deploy with her Army unit to Iraq for a second tour has been arrested and will be returned to Fort Lewis, Washington. Eugene police spokesman Sergeant Rich Strongman said Specialist Suzanne Swift, who is 21, was detained at the home of her family last night. She was listed as AWOL late last year. Her mother, Sarah Rich, told Oregon Public Broadcasting that her daughter served in Iraq with a military police unit in 2004 and endured name-calling and constant sexual harassment. Swift is expected to be returned to Fort Lewis tomorrow. Pentagon statistics indicate that since the beginning of the war, nearly 8,000 members of the four military branches have deserted, but that desertions have declined recently.
And Lisa Loving interviewed Michael Kerrigan, the head of the Community Alliance of Lane County, or CALC.
Michael, can you tell me just a little bit about what CALC does?
Well, for 40 years, CALC has been working for peace and justice. I work for the peace part of CALC, so we do anti-war organizing. CALC has a committee countering military recruitment that goes into schools, giving the kids the facts about joining the military, but also for years CALC has done anti-racism and anti-homophobia work.
We just got word through your office, in fact, that the Eugene police have arrested a soldier who is declining to participate in the military. Is CALC or is yourself or are people in the community doing anything to support the family? For people that are going to hear this on the news and they want to do something about it, do you have anything they can do or any place they can get more information?
Well, certainly. We are going to be having a vigil today from 4 to 6 in front of the Lane County Jail that's on 5th Street near Willamette. We're urging folks in the Eugene area to come on down and show Sarah and her daughter Suzanne the kind of support that they need to get through this difficult time. But also, folks elsewhere can support the family with financial help. They have hired a lawyer. They are taking on the U.S. Army, and I think we need to get behind them. So folks want to figure out what they can do, give us a call at CALC at 541-485-1755 or email me at CALC, D-E-V, and that's V as in Victor, at EFN.org, because we're also urging folks to contact Congressman DeFazio and urging him to take action so Sarah won't have to go to jail, go to Fort Lewis on her own recognizance in about a week.
You are a longtime, very respected peace activist, and you've been around the block a few times. Have you ever seen a story quite like this come down the pike where the civilian police are getting involved in this way?
This is the first time I've ever heard of anything like this happening. We want to know, why are the Eugene police doing this? And I know the city councilor, Andrew Ortiz, who represents me at the Eugene City Council, is concerned as well. We want to find out, why did they do it? It seems to me a real stretch that the Eugene police should be protecting the citizens of this community and not arresting one of our, a model citizen, Suzanne, who's willing to kind of, defy the U.S. Army for peace.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kerrigan. Have a wonderful day.
Okay, thank you.
According to the Oregonian, after weeks of behind-the-scenes talks with union leaders brokered by the mayor's office, all 5 Portland City Commissioners have signed on to a public safety pension and disability reform package. The package appears to have union support but falls short of what outside experts recommended. The mayor's office and commissioners hailed it as a major step that will shore up the city's finances and be fiscally responsible to taxpayers. They've gained the support of the police union's executive board. Approval of the firefighters union and Portland Business Alliance is expected to follow. But critics called the proposed reforms a political, watered-down compromise. They say the package boosts the pension benefits of new police and firefighters and makes limited changes to the fund's disability program. The disability system came under scrutiny in July of 2005 when an investigation by the Oregonian found that lax rules, poor accountability, and generous benefits pushed the city's disability costs far above the average for police and firefighters elsewhere in Oregon.
The Open Publishing Newswire reports that the National Lawyers Guild has issued a press release making official their condemnation of the Green Scare. A hotline has been established to support activists targeted by the FBI and other government agencies. The Guild condemns the FBI's Operation Backfire Green Scare tactics as an unconstitutional abuse of authority. It says the FBI has engaged in an orchestrated campaign of issuing subpoenas to environmental activists, conducting large-scale roundup of activists, and levying unprecedented penalties for property crimes, and using threats of severe sanctions to leverage fear of conviction and force individuals to turn state's evidence. In 2004, the federal government launched Operation Backfire, a wide-scale investigation of environmental and animal rights activists. It used paid informants and conducted warrantless spying on a range of organizations. Since then, numerous individuals around the country have been arrested and charged with arson, destruction of property, and conspiracy in the government's attempts to target the Earth Liberation Front, the ELF, and the Animal Liberation Front, ALF. Others were subpoenaed to testify before grand juries, and some were charged with the use of destructive devices, one count of which carries a mandatory 30-year sentence, and two counts calls for mandatory life in prison. The government is overcharging people with offenses that carry severe sanctions to force them to accept guilty pleas for a lower sentence or to intimidate them into turning state's evidence. The National Lawyers Guild believes that the government is misusing destructive device charges and engaging in selection prosecution.
A federal judge yesterday struck down a voter-approved initiative that barred the government from sending radioactive waste to the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. The court ruled that the measure violates federal authority over nuclear waste and interstate commerce. Washington voters overwhelmingly approved an Initiative 297 in November of 2004. The initiative, now known as the Cleanup Priority Act, barred the government from sending any more waste to the Hanford site until all existing waste there is cleaned up. The government immediately filed suit, arguing that the initiative violated its authority over nuclear waste under the Atomic Energy Act, as well as its authority over interstate commerce. U.S. District Judge Alan McDonald in Yakima agreed yesterday that the initiative is unconstitutional in its entirety. The State Attorney General's Office, which defended the initiative, has argued that the state's authority to regulate hazardous waste extended to mixed waste that includes radioactive materials. The state also argued that the federal government could not strike down a law without first seeing how it would be applied.
And according to a new study, the Pacific Ocean off the British Columbia's coast was warmer than normal last year, leading to an increased number of exotic species such as tropical squid and the reduced growth rate in salmon. This is from the Toronto Globe and Mail. The 7th Annual State of the Pacific Ocean Report predicts poor salmon runs this summer and fall because of poor ocean conditions dating back 3 years. The document holds out a glimmer of hope that the warm water cycle, which is bad for salmon and herring, might be ending, although it is too early to tell. Among the key findings are that the warm ocean temperature led to a reduced upwelling of cold water that normally carries a rich supply of microscopic plants or phytoplankton to the surface, where juvenile salmon feed. There was also a delay in the spring bloom of plankton, which in cold water years comes just as young salmon are emerging from spawning rivers to start their juvenile period of growth in salt water. The result? Salmon growth and survival rates were down.
A federal appeals court in San Francisco will hear arguments today in the case of Bay Area residents suing to block the Bush administration from opening a biodefense lab there. The Department of Homeland Security wants to open the facility at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. It would test some of the deadliest toxins known to man in simulations of terrorist attacks. Officials say construction is complete and the facility is set to open by August. The two local groups, Tri-Valley Cares and Nuclear Watch New Mexico, fear the lab could have an accident that would leak bioagents into the air. They say the Bush administration did not go through the proper safety assessments before going forward with the project.
Top White House aide Karl Rove has been told by prosecutors that he won't be charged with any crimes in the investigation into the leak of CIA officers' identity. Rove will not be charged with any crime. Rove's attorney, Robert Luskin, said that Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald informed him of the decision yesterday, ending months of speculation about the fate of Rove, the architect of Bush's 2004 re-election, now focused on stopping Democrats from capturing the House or Senate in this November's election. Fitzgerald has already secured a criminal indictment against Vice President Dick Cheney's former chief of staff, I. Lewis Scooter Libby. Fitzgerald met with Chief U.S. District Judge Thomas Hogan before he notified Rove. Hogan has been overseeing the grand juries in the CIA leak case. Rove testified five times before a grand jury, most recently in April. He has admitted he spoke with columnist Robert Novak and Time magazine reporter Matt Cooper in the days before they published Plame's name in July of 2003.
Citing national security, a government lawyer told a federal appeals court yesterday that the CIA should not be forced to reveal whether it has been given authority to detain and interrogate suspected terrorists in overseas jails. The American Civil Liberties Union has asked the spy agency to turn over any documents related to secret foreign prisons. Though such prisons have been detailed in news reports, U.S. officials have never said that they exist. Assistant U.S. Attorney Peter Skinner urged the Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals to uphold a lower court holding that the CIA can refuse to respond to a Freedom of Information Act request by the ACLU. He acknowledged that the CIA has the authority to assist foreign governments in the capture, detention, and interrogation of terrorists, but said it cannot be forced to tell whether it also is doing so independently. In written arguments, he said reporting to the ACLU's request could cause serious damage to national security by giving enemies information about specific intelligence methods and activities used by the CIA. The appeals court did not immediately rule on the matter and invited both sides to submit more information.
Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter says he's prepared to force telephone company executives to testify about the White House's eavesdropping program if the Bush administration doesn't fully cooperate in drafting new rules on what's allowable. Specter said he was more hopeful after talking Thursday with Vice President Dick Cheney that committee hearings and subpoenas could be avoided. Specter has threatened to subpoena executives of major phone companies to get them to testify about their cooperation with the National Security Agency. But one company lawyer has told Specter the executives won't be able to testify about any classified information. Cheney indicated he was willing to work with Congress on new rules governing eavesdropping, but he stepped short of promising any action and said a final decision on the bill would be up to Bush. Specter is the most vocal Republican to oppose the White House's directive that allows the National Security Agency to monitor some calls and emails of Americans without court approval.
It's a court case that could have major implication for President Bush's faith-based initiative. Is an evangelical Christian prison rehabilitation program paid for by tax dollars constitutional? The answer, issued by a federal judge in Iowa on June 2nd, was a resounding no. Judge Robert Pratt found that the interchange program run by Prison Fellowship Ministries in an Iowa prison was pervasively sectarian and that the facts leave no room to doubt that the state of Iowa is excessively entangled with religion through the program. The decision, which will be appealed, is a major victory for those who believe America has gone too far in supporting religious or semi-religious activities using public money. The judge criticized the lack of real choice on part of inmates who wanted a similar non-sectarian option and the fact that prisons were offered a variety of special privileges and incentives to join interchange, such as better cells and special visitation rights. Judge Pratt ordered Prison Fellowship Ministries to repay the $1.5 million it received from the state and to terminate the program within 60 days.
FBI statistics released yesterday show that overall violent crime reports rose by the largest percentage increase in 15 years in 2005, including a 5% increase in the District of Columbia. The FBI's annual crime report shows increases in three of the four major categories of violent crime, murder, robbery, and assault, contributing to an overall increase of 2.5% in violent offenses from 2004. The increase affected all categories of cities except those over 1 million in population, such as New York, Los Angeles, and Detroit, where violent offenses continued to fall. The rise in violent offenses nationally represents the largest overall crime spike since 1991 and the first significant increase since 1992, when crime began to plummet dramatically on its way to the lowest levels in three decades. It marks the first increase since 2001. But property crimes continued to register improvement in 2005. The biggest rise came in murders, which rose nearly 5% in 2005.
More than 20,000 people along Florida's Gulf Coast were ordered to clear out yesterday as Alberto, the very first tropical storm of 2006 Atlantic hurricane season, unexpectedly picked up steam and threatened to come ashore as a hurricane. Forecasters posted a hurricane warning for the Gulf Coast and a tropical storm warning from north of Daytona Beach to the Georgia-South Carolina line, saying Alberto could begin battering the coast early this morning. Governor Jeb Bush signed a declaration of emergency, allowing him to call up the National Guard and put laws against price gouging into effect. If Alberto came ashore as a hurricane, it would be the earliest hurricane in 40 years to hit the United States, according to the National Hurricane Center.
During the cleanup after Hurricane Katrina, local officials and the Environmental Protection Agency depended on one source to find hotspots of toxic chemicals, a database known as the Toxic Release Inventory. Until a few weeks ago, the inventory was to be slashed to comply with the Federal Paperwork Reduction Act. The EPA said they were gutting the 20-year-old database to save paper. What they didn't say was that the decision would dramatically reduce pressure on polluters. Under the plan, companies would report biannually instead of annually and would only have to report toxic releases of more than 5,000 pounds. Currently, the EPA requires reporting of any release greater than 500 pounds. Environmental watchdogs say the inventory is critical to public health, but on May 22nd, 8 months after the EPA proposed the cutbacks, the House of Representatives voted for an amendment that would save the inventory. 92% of the nays came from Republicans, and it is unclear whether the amendment will pass the Senate or be signed into law by President Bush. The EPA denies the move will harm the environment.
The federal government plans to phase out a common pesticide that has been used on apples, pears, and other crops since the late 1950s, acting amid complaints from environmental groups that the chemical poisons farm workers. The Environmental Protection Agency announced that it would end the use of azinfos methyl beginning the next year on nuts, nursery stocks, and Brussels sprouts. The pesticide, also called AZM, would be banned on apples, blueberries, cherries, pears, and parsley in 2010. The agency's plan is up for public comment for 2 months. During the phase-out, the EPA also plans to eliminate aerial spraying, requiring 100-foot buffers around water bodies, and require medical monitoring of workers entering fields sprayed with AZM. Farmworker and environmental groups sued the EPA and federal court in Seattle in 2004, arguing that the agency was wrong to continue allowing a pesticide that could cause seizures, paralysis, and death. That lawsuit was settled when the EPA agreed to reconsider the use of AZM and another pesticide, phosmet.
Governments and rights groups have deplored the deaths of three detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The U.S. State Department has distanced itself from comments by a top official that the three suicides by prisoners at Guantanamo Bay were a good PR move. Meanwhile, a U.S. lawyer has said that one of the three who killed themselves was due to be freed but did not know it. Mark Denbo, who represents some of the foreign detainees at the U.S. camp in Cuba, said the man was among 141 prisoners due for release. He said the prisoner was not told because U.S. officials had not decided which country he would be sent to. When asked about the comments, the State Department spokesman said the U.S. had serious concerns whenever someone took their own life. Camp Commander Rear Admiral Harry Harris has also taken a tough line on the suicide, saying it was an act of asymmetric warfare waged against us. Lawyers say the men who hanged themselves had been driven by despair. This from the BBC.
The Washington Department of Homeland Security allowed a man to enter its headquarters last week using a fake matricula consular card as identification, despite federal rules that say the Mexican-issued card is not valid ID at government buildings. Bruce DeSalle, a retired New York City police officer, used his phony card, which lists his place of birth as Tijuana, B.C., and his address as 123 Fraud Boulevard on an incorrectly spelled Staten Island, New York, to enter the building for a meeting with Homeland Security officials. DeSalle said he had the card for 4 years and he has used it again and again to board airliners and enter government buildings without being turned down once. But he said he was surprised that DHS, the agency in charge of determining secure IDs, accepted it. The Mexican government has issued millions of matricula consular cards in the past few years, mostly to give undocumented immigrants a form of identification that banks and other institutions will accept. The FBI, in testimony to Congress, has said that the cards are not secure. The General Services Administration ruled in 2003 that the matricula consular is not valid ID for entering a federal building. DeSalle obtained the card from a street vendor in California. This from the Washington Times.
Bush arrived in Iraq today and is issued to on the ground for more than 5 hours speaking to U.S. troops. This from Reuters. After Bush's arrival at a palace used by the U.S. Embassy, he met with Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. Bush is eager to show progress in Iraq and restore American confidence in his handling of the war. It was his second visit to Iraq and his first visit since November of 2003.
Hundreds of Palestinian security forces loyal to President Mahmoud Abbas went on a rampage against the Hamas-led government yesterday night, riddling the parliament and cabinet buildings with bullets and setting them on fire in retaliation for an attack by Hamas gunmen. The mob then set fire to one of the cabinet buildings, gutting the building's fourth floor. When a fire engine approached the scene, one gunman lay on the road in front of it, preventing it from reaching the building. Dozens of gunmen from Al-Aqsa's Martyr Brigades, a pro-Fatah militia, joined the security men. Fatah government said they abducted a Hamas lawmaker, Khalil Rabai, after attacking his office and setting it on fire. The claim, made in a telephone call to the Associated Press, could not be immediately verified. The rampage in Ramallah followed an earlier attack by Hamas gunmen on a preventative security installation in Gaza. The attack set off day-long clashes that left 2 people dead and 14 wounded.
And an Israeli airstrike killed 10 people today, including an alleged militant, 2 children, 3 medical workers who rushed to the scene of an initial blast. The deaths of at least 8 civilians in the Gaza City attack is sure to heighten anti-Israeli passions already inflamed by a weekend blast at Gaza shore that killed 8 beachgoers. It was also likely to further complicate efforts by moderate Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas to persuade the balking Hamas government to endorse a proposal implicitly recognizing Israel. Abbas condemned the airstrike, calling it state terrorism. The deadly airstrike came just hours after hundreds of Palestinian police loyal to Abbas went on a rampage against the Hamas government, riddling the parliament building and cabinet office with bullets before setting them ablaze in retaliation for an attack by Hamas gunmen in the Gaza Strip. The rampage raised new fears the Palestinians were headed towards civil war. The Israeli military said its aircraft targeted militants on a mission to launch Katyusha rockets at southern Israel.
An apparent al-Qaeda website announced a successor to Abu Musab al-Zarqawi today, a different name than the one the U.S. military forces had cited last week. Abu Hamza al-Muhajir was described as hoping to continue what al-Zarqawi had started, according to ABC News reports. The statement on the site said, quote, "The word of Mujahideen Shura Council has gathered in one word to choose Sheikh Abi Hama al-Muhajir to be the successor for the deceased Sheikh Abu Musab al-Zarqawi to head al-Qaeda. Sheikh Abi Hamas al-Muhajir is a good brother, ex-member in jihad, with a lot of religious information. We ask God to lead him and us to the right path and to accomplish what Sheikh Zarqawi has started," end quote. According to Reuters, Muharrir, little known in the West, was not among the names that al-Qaeda experts had expected as Zarqawi's likely successor.
Police in Iran have beaten a small group of women activists trying to hold a protest for greater legal rights in the biggest square in the capital. Several people were arrested by the security forces who moved in almost as soon as the activists started gathering. About 20 women sat on the grass in Hafta-i-Tehr Square in central Tehran and began to sing a feminist song. They were calling for equal divorce and custody rights and a ban on polygamy. The BBC says the police, who massively outnumbered the protesters, almost immediately started beating the women to disperse them. The viciousness of the police attack caused men who were passing by in the street to protest.
The European Union has formally opened accession talks with Turkey, despite a last-ditch objection from Cyprus. A first round of talks on science and research was concluded on day one of the negotiations, sealing the first of 35 policy areas scheduled for discussion. Talks on all 35 chapters are expected to take about 10 years. Cyprus had asked the EU to press Turkey for official recognition and to open ports to Cypriotic shipping, forcing the EU, a presidency, to broker a late deal. Turkey had threatened to boycott the meeting of foreign ministers in Luxembourg unless Cyprus, divided since 1974, agreed to compromise. Austrian Foreign Minister Ursula Plasnik, whose country holds the EU presidency, said concluding the first chapter was not an easy matter. "We've made a start. It's the first step along a path where every step will have to be approved by every EU member," she said. The EU did go some way towards accepting Cyprus's demands. This from the BBC.
Lawyers acting for a group of Canadian terrorist suspects have complained about a media blackout on court proceedings. Speaking after 14 of the 17 suspects appeared at a bail hearing in Brampton, Ontario, they said it was indicative that the men cannot get a fair trial. Details of the charges they face have not been published, but their lawyers say they include an alleged plot to storm Parliament and behead the Prime Minister. The accusations against the men, most Canadians, has caused nationwide shock. Detailed charges have not been released, but a defense lawyer said they range from plots to blow up Parliament buildings to attacks on media outlets to press demands that Canadian forces be withdrawn from Afghanistan. One suspect was accused of wanting to behead the Prime Minister, an allegation defense lawyer said was scaremongering. Prime Minister Stephen Harper held a closed-door meeting with Muslim community leaders at the weekend to discuss the impact of their arrests. There have been fears of a backlash. A Toronto mosque was vandalized after the arrests were announced, and on Friday, a prominent imam was attacked outside his mosque in Montreal by a man carrying a knife. This from the BBC.
China reported a fresh record monthly trade surplus of $13 billion in May, the latest sign that the country's economy is continuing to surge. It beat the previous high set last October and brought the surplus for the first 5 months of 2006 to nearly $47 billion. The latest figures are likely to renew calls, particularly from the U.S., for China to raise the value of the yuan. The U.S. says Beijing keeps the yuan artificially low, which China denies. While Washington accuses China of maintaining a low yuan to give Chinese exporters an unfair advantage, Beijing counters that raising the value of the yuan too quickly could destabilize the sector and lead to job losses. The difficulty for China is that while its economy has boomed in recent years, the vast majority of the growth has been through exports. Economists say the domestic economy is continuing to lag behind the export sector because the population is saving too much money instead of spending it. This from the BBC. This has been the KBOO Morning News for Tuesday, the 13th, 2006. Thanks for listening. Today's editor is Chris Andre. And KBOO volunteers edited and produced some of the tape stories you hear today. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Becca Bartelson.
And I'm Brian Smith.
We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in Columbia River Gorge on translator K246AA, and 100.7 in Willamette Valley on translator K220HR. If you'd like to volunteer in your community newsroom, call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202, or email at amnews@kboo.org. Portland area weather, showers likely, a chance of thunderstorms over the Cascades, highs in the mid-60s to 70s. Tonight, mostly cloudy, chance of showers, temperatures in the low to mid-50s. Coming up on your handmade, homegrown, all-natural, free-range radio.